This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Bertaram and Mark Carman. It is Wednesday, October the 14th. It's Stacking the Box. Matt Bertaram, I hear you're angry today. You're an angry Matt Bertaram. I like when you're angry.
I'm tired. I'm borderline hungry, even though I just ate like a half hour ago. So I'm keyed up. I'm ready to go. We got a lot to talk about, and I'm ready to really dive in aggressively.
I'm just going to have to do story time, though, with Carm just to start her because you're just tired and angry. You know, I do the Bears postgame show, which is now on Tuesday nights on WGN Radio. Story for another time. But Dan Hampton was asked, what did you do before a game? And he said that him and Steve McMichael, who I know you are well aware of, these are two insane interior defensive linemen, although Hampton played on both inside and outside at different points in his career. Not the point. They would wake up on Sunday. They were roommates. And his method was to just start. He would make a huge pot of coffee and just start pounding coffee. And he wouldn't eat. So he would be hopped up on caffeine, super freaking irritated, and just like, what? Yeah, you know, just like completely on edge. And that's how he would play. Hungry and a pot of coffee. And that's how he'd go out and try to kill people.
That doesn't, this does not surprise me. You know, listen, not that by any means I am a professional athlete or ever was, because Lord knows that was never happening in any sport. But I played hockey at a reasonably high level in high school in New York. And before games, I was actually a polar opposite of that. Like, everybody has their thing, but I would bring that. I'll date myself a little bit, but like a Walkman, or at the very end of my high school career, like an iPod. And I would play, believe it or not, I'd play like symphony music. And I would go to sleep. I'd get dressed with everything but my skates on, and I'd go to sleep in the locker room for like 20, 30 minutes, just listening to like violins and pianos, and it just really calmed me down. But I needed to be calm because I was keyed up the whole day for the games. Usually, you know, I play at night on the weekends, and I had to build myself up. Like, I had to build myself up all day, then I'd calm down, I'd take a nap, and then I'd wake up and then have about 10 minutes before the game, put my skates on, listen to the game plan one more time, and then just be absolutely ready to go by the time the puck was dropped. But I did. I had to calm myself down, or I wouldn't play well because I'd be too keyed up. So I had to calm myself down and let the game jack me back up as the day went on.
So growing up in upper New York?
An hour and a half outside New York City.
What would you call it?
Catskills.
Okay, growing up in the Catskills, Matt Bertaram would listen to Beethoven.
Not Beethoven, but like Jerry Goldsmith stuff. Like, I'd listen to like the Jurassic Park theme, or like music from like Rudy or something. Like, it had all these strings, and it would just calm me down. I always liked that kind of music. I still do, and so I just listened to it, and then I'd wake up, take the earbuds out, put the skates on. Our coach would say, okay, this is who's starting. This is our game plan, yada, yada, yada. And then I'd be, you know, we'd get on the ice, we'd warm up for 5 minutes, and I'd be higher than the sun, ready to go for the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I had to like calm myself down, or I would just be too keyed up, and I'd not play well.
So what we learned here to start Stacking the Box on Wednesday, October 14th, is that Matt Bertaram and the Hall of Famer Dan Hampton went about their pre-games equally different, but both were extremely effective. That's what I got.
I think Hampton probably has me. I think maybe I should have done what he did. It worked out better for him.
Hey, you on the high school Catskills hockey level were just as successful as Hampton in the NFL. Those are different levels, but that's how we're going to call it today.
A little bit.
So, all right, let's get into it here, team, and thank you for putting on Stack in the Box. We really appreciate it. If you do have time to give a rating and write a comment, we greatly appreciate that even more. Huge games this week, week six. We got Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, which is sweet. Nobody really saw that coming this year, at least the Bucks and the Packers version of it. Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, Bills and Chiefs, the Browns and the Steelers, kind of a borderline historic meeting between those two teams, combined 8-1. But what are you most excited about between those three?
I have to say Brady and Rodgers, for obvious reasons. I mean, they've been great quarterbacks for so long, but they've been in opposite conferences, so they never really play each other. They've never played in the Super Bowl. This is the rare time when they play each other, and they're both coming off extra time off. I mean, Rodgers and the Packers off a bye week. Brady, they play last Thursday, so they get the extra 3 days. And this is a big game. Like, it really legitimately – look, it's bigger for the Buccaneers. They're at home in the game. They're 3-2. If they lose the three games behind the Packers in the loss column, and they obviously lose the head-to-head tiebreaker with them, so that is a major issue in terms of home field advantage. But it's big for the Packers, too. Like, the division, as much as we've talked about the Bears and if they're contenders or kind of fraudulent, whatever, they're 4-1. Like, they're there. They're playing well enough to keep winning. And if you're Green Bay, how much, even without fans, how much does home field matter to you in January, right? Like, you would, I'm sure, prefer to be at Lambeau than you would in Seattle or Tampa or New Orleans. So this is a very big game. To me, it's the game of the day on Sunday. But I'm glad of the three games you mentioned, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, this game, and then Mahomes against Allen on Monday. All of them are in different time slots. So can sit down and watch Brown Steelers to start the day, late window Brady and Rodgers, Monday quasi-afternoon Chiefs Bills. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Bucks suffering the loss of Vita Vea, broke his leg against the Bears, out for the regular season, or the rest of the season, I should say. It's an interesting matchup here on a million different levels, by the way. Tampa Bay's been phenomenal against the run. They also get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Rodgers, shockingly, at least to me, hasn't been great under pressure. His completion rate under pressure this year, he's only above starting quarterbacks Dwayne Haskins and Mitchell Trubisky, according to Pro Football Focus, which I swear Pro Football Focus has to be doing something wrong there, but they're Pro Football Focus, so they're probably not doing something wrong. So I don't know. I mean, Tampa Bay does get to the quarterback. It's a really interesting matchup here. I think it's going to be a ton of fun. But and I'm also – the Bills and the Chiefs, man, this is – you're talking about a Bills defense – that is scuffling along, but their offense is not scuffling, even though last night was pretty brutal. So I don't know. Can Kansas City come back here after giving up 40 to the Raiders? I find that pretty interesting.
You know what? We'll talk about it later because we're going to do not guess the lines, but we're going to talk about the lines and kind of make our predictions. I don't know. I'll say this. I do think it's going to be a fairly high-scoring game. Both teams offensively can put it up there. The one thing that I do find interesting in this one is the Bills. You just talked about how the Buccaneers bring a lot of pressure. They blitz. They blitz more than any team in football by percentage. The Bills are second. Mahomes historically destroys the blitz. Here's the crux of this game. Leslie Frazier, the defensive coordinator for Buffalo, does he blitz in this game? Do they continue to do what they do, or do they back off? Now, we asked the same question a couple weeks ago when the Chiefs played Baltimore. Baltimore is a top five blitz team. Last year led the league in blitzing. Martindale did not back off. He blitzed and blitzed and blitzed and blitzed, and the Chiefs just destroyed them in that game. Will the Bills do the same thing? Or will they say, you know what? We're going to drop seven and play coverage. They've had a hard time all year getting to the quarterback, even when they do blitz. But I don't know what the answer is there. But if I'm Buffalo, I'm backing off. And I'm hoping we can get pressure with four. If we can't, I'm trying to keep everything in front of us. That seems to be the only way to even moderately slow down Kansas City. It's going to be very interesting. If they blitz, I think the Chiefs will kill them. The Chiefs kill everybody when they blitz. So I don't think that's a way to win the game.
To me, I'm most interested in, because I think no matter what defense Buffalo plays, the Chiefs are going to put up points here. And I will be paying close attention to the blitzing aspect because of what you just teed up here, Matt Verderam, and that's why I enjoy being on the show with you, because you make me a better football fan. But Josh Allen, he's only got three picks all season long, right?
Yep.
But he threw two of them yesterday as we're recording. So I'm wondering, is there a hangover there? Are you coming right back and you're super confident and you're going to put up big numbers? Or are you now maybe in your head a little bit because – he's been fantastic. 14 touchdown passes, only three picks. Completion yep. rates right up at 70%. The guy's been great. But, okay, now you're going up against arguably the best team in the AFC. You're coming off a rough outing. Are you really able to bounce back and be huge? Because they, no matter how well Buffalo does defensively, they're going to need Josh Allen to play well. That's obvious.
No question. And I think you're right on. Look, with Allen, to me, it's all about limiting the mistakes in this game. he cannot give the Chiefs extra possessions. If he does, they're going to lose. You just can't. Now, Kansas City, oddly enough, even after that atrocity against Derek Carr, they're ninth in the league in passing, in DVOA defensively. Like, they're a pretty good defense. They didn't play like it on Sunday, but other than Sunday, they've been pretty rock solid all year long. In fact, before that game, they were the only team not to give up more than 20 points in the game. So the Chiefs can play defense. With Allen, I think he does come back. I think he plays well. They might get John Brown back, who had a calf injury. He's a speedster for them. He's a vertical threat. Diggs is tremendous. Beasley's good underneath. And to be fair, one of those picks wasn't Allen's fault. It was popped up in the air on a pass. A guy, you know, should have been caught, and it wasn't. Now, to be totally transparent, there was also a pass on the next series that absolutely should have been picked off that was dropped. So take it for what it's worth. I think he'll be good. I'm curious to see what the Chiefs do in this game. Spagnuolo is not predictable. He's very different from game to game. There are sometimes he'll blitz like crazy, and other times he drops back. I have a feeling the Chiefs are going to drop a million guys into coverage in this game and try to make him throw the ball through tight windows. And by the way, he's got more than enough arm to do it. But I have a feeling that's how the Chiefs will play it, and they'll hope that Frank Clark and Chris Jones can get pressure without the blitz.
So I'm fired up for Steelers-Browns for a bunch of reasons here. Steelers 4-0 for the first time since 79. The Browns 4-1, their best start in 26 years. But the one thing I want to see, that's you, Myles Garrett. Go over there, and I don't care that Mason Rudolph's not starting and probably not going to see him. You go find him, and you have a moment in front of the Steelers fans, and you settle the score, buddy.
That would be incredible. Find
Freddie Kitchens too, by the way, even though he's long in Freddie Kitchens.
The man's not going to be at the stadium. You know what? I'll say this about that game. So everybody always says, you know, Brown Steelers, it's one of the great rivalries, right? Obviously close in proximity, geographically, and two teams have been in the same division dating back pre-merger. Those two teams have essentially never been good at the same time, ever. I mean, really, if you stop to think about it, right? Like, all those years, Browns entered the NFL in 1950. Well, guess what? The Steelers, who entered the NFL in 1933, didn't win a playoff game until 1972. So while the Browns were racking up all their titles in the 50s and early 60s, the Steelers were awful. The Steelers team of the 70s, the Browns were terrible. The Browns got good in the 80s. The Steelers were, okay. And then in the 90s, they had one time they met in 94, the last time Cleveland won 4-1. They met in the divisional round at Three Rivers. Pittsburgh won that game. Then 8 years later, they met at Heinz Field, and Tommy Maddox had that crazy comeback against Kelly Holcomb. Point is, this rivalry is more about geography than it is actual great games. So this is kind of cool. Like, they're actually both really good. Like, whoever wins is ahead of the other one in the standings. The thing I'm watching in this game, Pittsburgh has an incredible pressure rate. They have an incredible rate of knocking down the quarterback. They're number two in pressure rate. They're number one in getting home overall in terms of sacks. I want to see how Mayfield plays in this game. They have hidden him week after week after week running the ball. And you know what Pittsburgh does better than anybody else? Stop the run. They are not going to let them run all over them. I'd be shocked if they do. Mayfield is going to have to throw the ball. Now, the good news, if you're Cleveland, their corners are not great. You can get Pittsburgh's corners. You can. But can Mayfield do it? Because they don't have to blitz to get pressure, although they do blitz frequently, but they don't have to. Mayfield's going to have to make throws in this game, and he's going to have to do it in obvious passing downs. Can he do it? If he can, they win the game.
Let's just tee up one more thing about the impressive at 4-0 Steelers. They haven't beaten anyone. They beat the Giants. They beat the Broncos. They beat the Texans. They beat the Eagles. Those teams are a combined 3-15-1. So at least record-wise, and I think we all believe the Browns are better than those teams, even if we take out the records here. The Steelers have been impressive, but this is by far the toughest game they've played. So let's go, Cleveland. You can do this, Brownie fans. I'm rooting for the at least the perceived underdog here, which is interesting, by the way. That the whole concept that, and to underline your point, Matt, they've never met each other when the combined winning percentage between the two teams has been this high. So it's nice. I guess
It's a really, really good game. And by the way, you are right, not to belabor the point. The Steelers have played absolutely nobody, and they barely won all four of these games. And I'm somebody, I've been on the Steelers train since May. Okay, but at some point here, you do need to play a good football game. They barely beat Philadelphia. They needed a fourth quarter comeback to beat Houston. They did everything imaginable to give away a game to Denver and Jeff Driscoll. And week one was probably their most impressive performance. They beat the Giants by, I think, 12 points. Like, it wasn't exactly an overwhelming showing of force in that game. So, look, the one thing that is interesting, Roethlisberger is not throwing the ball deep at all. Everything. Everybody's talking about Breeze, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Roethlisberger's been every bit as bad in terms of checking the ball down. How does that manifest itself in this game?
Let's talk about who the best team in football is through 5 weeks of the schedule. We've got the Chiefs, who just lost. We've got Green Bay, who hasn't. Seattle, tough game with Minnesota this past week, could have easily lost that game. The Ravens, who, of course, have dropped one to the Chiefs. We can go outside the box, too. Who's your best team, Matt?
Kansas City. I just won't move off a great team for one loss. And by the way, that would have stood true if Seattle lost to Minnesota, if Green Bay loses to Tampa this weekend, whatever. Like, I've also, by the way, I feel the exact same way about Buffalo that I felt 2 days ago. It's the NFL. Like, I don't mean to be profane about it or anything, but, like, shit happens. I don't look at one game. Now, you lose two in a row? Like, whoever loses this Kansas City-Buffalo game, no, Kansas City, of course, is more established here. But if the Chiefs lose to the Bills, then I think you have to take a little bit of a deeper look at, hey, what, you know, is there something wrong? What's going on? If you said to me, every team's on a neutral field, who are you taking? I'm taking the Chiefs. So I will stick with the Chiefs, although the Packers are a really close second for me.
So not to nitpick the topic here, but you wrote Matt Verderam because you make the rundown. You are the leader of Stacking the Box. Who's the best team in football through 5 weeks? So through 5 weeks, who's the best team? That's got to be Green Bay, because they're undefeated and they've scored 150 points without a turnover in their first four games, which, by the way, no team in the history of the NFL has done, according to The Athletic's Bob McGinn, my guy. What's up, Bob McGinn? You love Stacking the Box. I know you do. So, and the Chiefs just gave up 500 yards to the Raiders. So I'm not saying they won't be the best team at the end of the year. If I had to bet my life on it, who's going to win the Super Bowl, I'd still pick Kansas City. But through 5 weeks, who's been the best team? I think you got to give it to Green Bay right now. I mean, Minnesota should, you know, I think that's a if we're parsing down the question, if you will, I think that's, I got to give it to the Packers. So we'll see what they do against the Bucs this week. All right, into the future we go. Are the Titans, the Tennessee COVID Titans, a legitimate contender in your eyes? What do you think?
Hey, by the way, maybe stop bragging about how, like,
overcame Taylor, like, Lewin.
Yeah, Taylor Lewin. Like, hey, bro.
Lewin, whatever.
Give it a rest, man. Like, even like Tannehill after the game, talking about, like, how they, like, what a tough couple weeks it was for them. Like, look.
Sure it was.
I bet it was.
Nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah, come on now. It's like when the Houston Astros come out and they're like, oh, nobody believed in us. You're a bunch of cheating frauds. Like, give it a rest. Look, that being said, do I think the Titans are a legitimate contender? If the definition of legitimate contender is that they can win the Super Bowl, no. I don't think they're a legitimate contender. If it is, could they knock off any team on a given Sunday in a playoff game? Yeah, I think they could. Tennessee has better offensive weapons than people realize. Like, Jonnu Smith's a pretty good tight end. A.J. Brown's an excellent receiver. Corey Davis has not lived up to his draft billing, but he's at least solid, and he didn't play on Tuesday night, but he's a good player. Same thing with Adam Humphries. And, of course, Henry there is the guy everybody thinks about. But Tannehill's played really well since he's become the starter there. Really well. Like Pro Bowl-esque. So the reason I don't put them on the upper echelon is I just think teams like Kansas City, Baltimore, and I know they beat Baltimore last year in the playoffs, but Kansas City, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, those teams just have those top-end guys that in January I think you just need to win. Like, those guys can just make things happen with that. I don't know that Tennessee can get to that gear, but I think Tennessee's good. I mean, you could argue Tennessee's top four team in the AFC. I mean, hell, you could argue they're better than Buffalo. They just beat the hell out of the Bills. So they're good. They're certainly, I think they'll win the division.
I am in on the Titans. I mean, you just blasted the Bills. Friggin' blasted them. Mm-hmm. That's impressive. And whatever, you want to use COVID as a rallying cry. Okay, I don't want to hear it, but I think they kind of feel like Titans against the world right now. They have a tremendous play action pass slash run attack offense going on right now. You're absolutely 1,000% right on Ryan Tannehill, which Miami, you have to be looking in the mirror on some level of how you did not realize what the skill set of Ryan Tannehill was so you can make him an effective quarterback, because clearly Tennessee has figured something out. And to your any given day point, I think they can. You get a couple of turnovers, get some ball control offense. Tannehill plays well. You know who's leading the NFL in yards per attempt passing the football? It's Ryan freaking Tannehill. They go down the field because of that offense. So the Titans, I mean, damn, you got to give it to them. I think it's a true story in Tennessee right now. They should be, and they are, by the way, puffing out their chest. So I'm in on Tennessee, if this is not the in or out segment, but I think they are. Let's do Drew Brees. Will he rebound, or are we officially in the never-ending decline? I think you're slightly optimistic on Drew.
I am. Look, I think he'll rebound to a degree. I mean, Michael Thomas is going to be back here after the bye now that his ankle's healed and his suspension is over. But when you watch the Saints, and I've watched every snap of them this year, Brees, I don't know whether it's he doesn't have confidence or he just knows that he can't physically drive the ball down the field. Like, they got Emmanuel Sanders to be a deep threat for them. They're running routes that are like 8 yards at most. And like every once in a blue moon, some team will bust a coverage, and Brees is smart enough to throw the ball down the field because he's so intelligent, having played all these years, that he sees a guy get open, he sees a bust, okay, he'll make that play. He's not throwing the ball down the field at all. Now, last year, averaged just under 8 yards an attempt, which is good. 27 touchdowns, 4 picks. As the year went on, he was fine. His last 4 regular season games, averaged just right around 300 yards in those games. He had 15 touchdowns, no picks. And by the way, those games include some real teams at Tennessee, home against the Niners. So, like, I think he'll get better. Thomas coming back will certainly help. But I don't think there's any denying. Look, that game against the Chargers on Monday night. Now, there's 2 ways of looking at that. He was not very good in that game. Statistically speaking, you look at it and go, well, you know, he threw for 325. That was dump off after dump off after dump off. I mean, guys are just picking up extra yards after the catch. And the Chargers, there's no team that pisses down their leg more than the Chargers. I mean, 2 17-point leads in a row, you couldn't win either one of those friggin' games? So, look, I think he'll get better marginally. I do think his days of being a top-5 quarterback, though, are cooked.
So, since you laid out all the football here, Verderam, I'm going to tell you why, off the field, I am all in on Drew Brees. Have you seen how he has – and cue the music right now if we had it. Have you seen how he has been channeling his Jefferson's moving on up home life, happy football life, Matt Verderam?
No, I have not seen that.
So he just purchased a deluxe condo in the Four Seasons, sky high, new New Orleans building. This courtesy of TMZ. He is he's living in the Four Seasons New Orleans Hotel and private residences. He's got in his Four Seasons, Verderam, he's got private access to a bar, a lounge, a golf simulator room. He's got a 75-foot outdoor pool. He can look at the Mississippi River. He can look at the French Quarter. And, yeah, I'm extremely freaking jealous of people who have tons of money, and I'm looking at this pool, and it looks freaking amazing. So he's just going to come home. He's going to chill. He's going to rejuvenate, and he's going to go over to the Superdome and play like the baller that Drew Brees was in his prime. Henceforth, I'm all in on Brees. What do you think?
I think that's an emotional argument, and not an argument rooted in fact. Listen, man, I'm a big Brees guy. I've read his autobiography. In fact, I own it. It's on my shelf right behind me, actually. I think the world of the guy is a person, and I think the world of him is a quarterback. but I think that it's coming to an end. Like, the Saints are not going to be in the Super Bowl if they can't play really well around him this year.
Sure.
Unless obviously I'm dead wrong and he just finds a fountain of
youth. No, you're dead right. But he is going to ride off into the sunset in a sweet pool at the Four Seasons with.
That's dope.
That's just really nice. Let's go on to Le'Veon Bell, who was released yesterday by the Jets. Yeah, great in Pittsburgh, not great in New York. Let's call it a disaster in New York, actually, from on the field, off the field, everything about him. But the talent is still there. Where does he end up? We're in Chicago. Bears Twitter is all hyped on Le'Veon Bell. The Bears would never do it. Where do you think he's going?
So I'll say this. I'm going to base this off of my own reporting from a few years ago on this when he was a free agent. I know when I reported back then, the Bears were interested in him then, but they couldn't afford him. So I definitely think the Bears are interested in him now, considering David Montgomery's not making anybody forget about Walter Payton.
That offensive line blows. Montgomery's been fine, but listen, if the Bears want to do it, go ahead. I'm all in, but they're very conservative with this stuff. But go ahead.
Tell you what, though, he'll have 100 receptions with Foles. Literally 100.
All right, well, that would help.
I mean, God almighty, man. They'll throw the ball at him 10 times a game. Like, I think the Bears are involved. But I'll give you two other teams. One, the Dolphins. I reported from multiple sources last when he was a free agent, 2 years ago. Now, obviously, things change in life. If all things were equal, he wanted to go to Miami. He wanted to go play on South Beach and enjoy that lifestyle because he loves his music as well. There's a whole bunch of things that go into it. Right. I mean, we all love our music. And
South Beach.
Oh, South Beach is unreal. We can't get into that conversation where there's a recording. But yeah, South Beach is amazing. No, but if he had had his druthers, if every team had offered an equal contract back then, he would have signed with Miami. So I think the Dolphins are very much involved. They don't have a running back they're in love with either. And they're actually not terrible. Like, they got the Jets this week and they win that game. They're 3-3. They're at least in the mix. The other team to watch is the Chiefs. Now, I'll be clear. This isn't a sourced report or anything. However, there's a lot of reasons I think the Chiefs fit. I did report back in August that the Chiefs were interested in Leonard Fournette, and they were. Then it came out that Adrian Peterson was a guy they were interested in. That was reported, I believe, by NFL Network. The Chiefs, when Bell was a free agent, were not willing anywhere near to spend the kind of money it was going to cost to get him. It's not going to cost that kind of money now. And the Chiefs look at a guy like Bell and say, we can throw him the ball a million times out of the backfield. We can spell Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And, oh, by the way, he's not going to cost anything. So I think for the Chiefs, it makes a lot of sense. They do not have a back they love behind Edwards-Helaire. Darwin Thompson was that guy, but Thompson struggled with the playbook at times, and he fumbled, which is something that drives Andy Reid, of course, crazy. Those are the three teams I would watch that I think are front runners for Bell.
All right. I like it. Let's go to Matt Ryan and the Indianapolis Colts. You're drawing this connection because I guess Philip Rivers is not going to be the answer in Indy. Although I still think there's like one like ounce of gas left in that tank.
Oh, No, man.
Okay. No. I just said an ounce. That's all I said was an ounce. Not even a quarter of a tank, but okay. You're asking, should the Colts be trying to get Matt Ryan? It'd be very expensive to do this. Salary cap wise, he goes to $44.466 million in bonus money if he's traded or cut before June 1st. So I don't exactly know how Indy could do all that, but when teams want to get creative at the NFL, they always do. So you got the Colts should be in on Matt Ryan.
I'm saying that, look, whether it's during this year or after this year, if I'm the Colts, yeah, absolutely. Matt Ryan's still a borderline top 10 quarterback in the NFL. He's still a good player. I get he's in his mid-30s, but you and I both know, look, this isn't 1987 anymore where quarterbacks are pretty much beaten to hell and done by the time they're 32. Like, I don't think it's going to be rare to see quarterbacks play to their early 40s. I don't. I think a lot of guys are going to be able to do it. They're so protected. And physically, what the hell? I mean, you can throw the football. So I think Ryan's got a lot of gas left. The Colts have Brissett signed through the end of this year. They have Rivers signed through the end of this year. Brissett obviously is not the answer. He's a good backup, but he's not a starter. Rivers is done, man. Like cooked. all the way through, on fire at this point. Somebody get the fire extinguisher. Like, he's beyond done. And I was somebody who thought going to Indy might revive him for a year. He has no arm anymore. He can't drive the ball. It's just, and that combined with some shoddy decision-making, not great. So if I'm the Colts, I'm looking at every avenue possible. Okay, assuming they can't get Dak Prescott at the end of the year in free agency, I'm assuming that the Cowboys will find a way to keep him. Ryan, to me, is my next best option because they're not going to draft high enough to get anybody of note. So, yeah, if I'm them, I'm absolutely looking at Ryan. I think the Falcons need to rebuild that whole thing.
They do, and new coach, new general manager, new quarterback, all of it's coming to Atlanta and probably before the 2021 season gets going, and that's fine. Matt Ryan in Indy would be a sweet ending for Matt Ryan. I'd like to see Matt Ryan get to the mountaintop here. He deserves it. He's been a very productive quarterback, class act, all of it. Would Indy be the place to do it for him? I'm not sure, but that defense is legit. Let's make some money here, Matt. Place your bets. We got five games for you. And we started the show talking about the Packers and the Bucks after we learned about Verderam's hockey career and his Frank Sinatra / Beethoven / Jurassic Park.
Jerry Goldsmith, baby. He did Rudy and Jurassic Park.
There we go. That's beautiful. I love Rudy. Packers are a 2.5-point favorite at Tampa. Who are you taking?
I like the Bucks in this game. I just think they're a desperate team. I'll say this. To me, it's the biggest toss of the week. I think either team obviously could win. I like Tampa, if not just to win, at least to cover. I think it'd be a 1 or 2 point game. It feels like the kind of game that'll come right down to it. I think the Packers are better. I think the Buccaneers are more desperate. They're at home in the game. They need to win. And I think Brady, with Evans healthy, with Godwin potentially back, they can throw the ball in the Packers. The one thing with the Packers, they've not played teams that have had any of their weapons. And I forget who tweeted this, so I want to give credit because this wasn't my initial observation, but I saw it. They played the Lions without Galladay. They played the Falcons without Julio Jones. They played the Saints without Michael Thomas. And there was the Vikings played the Vikings as well in week one. They've played all these teams without like major weapons. Now, do I think the Packers are really good and deservedly 4-0? Yes. But the Buccaneers, if they're healthy, are going to test that defense more than anybody else has.
So Green Bay coming off a bye 2009 to 2014, 6-0. Last 5 years, 1-4, and they've lost their last three. Does this matter? Probably not, which is why I'm going with Green Bay. Look, Aaron Rodgers, you have to be freaking irritated that everybody considers Tom Brady the GOAT while he's playing alongside you in his career. Go out and beat Brady, at least in this particular scenario, and do a dance. Aaron Rodgers going big, Matt. That's my prediction, and the Packers roll over the Bucks. Chiefs, 3.5-point favorite at Buffalo. -3.5. Thank you. The Chiefs are 3.5-point favorite at Buffalo. What do you got?
So I thought about this for a while because you could make an argument either way. But I think I'm taking the Chiefs here. I do. Look, Buffalo is a legitimate team, so I don't want anybody to read that the wrong way. I think the Bills are going to win the AFC East. I think they're going to be right there in the playoffs. They're going to be a problem. Josh Allen is legitimately improved. He's been great this year. I'm taking the Chiefs for two reasons. The Bills cannot run the football. Going into Tuesday night, they averaged 3.7 yards a carry. It's 28th in the NFL. The Chiefs, not a great run defense, but you're running for 3.7 yards a carry. It doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence. You're going to start gashing the Chiefs left and right in this game. I think to beat the Chiefs, you've at least got to have some drives where you sustain them and you're on the field for a while. Otherwise, Mahomes gets in rhythm. The other part of this is, we talked about it earlier, the Bills blitz a ton. Part of the reason they blitz a ton is because they've not been able to get pressure. Okay, they're 23rd in pressure rate despite blitzing the second most of any team in the NFL. If you don't get to Mahomes, you're dead. You're dead. And if you blitz them, you're really dead, as the Ravens found out. Ray of hope for the Bills? The Raiders had 25 pressures coming into their game against the Chiefs for the whole year. And they had 26 against Kansas City, which is just insane. But that's kind of also the reason I'm picking the Chiefs. I just don't think a good line is going to have a bad week like that 2 weeks in a row. I think it's like a 34-27 game. I'll take Kansas City to cover and win the game.
I'm going the hangover is real. The motivation is lacking. The defense is sleeping. Buffalo is excellent on third down. 57.8% conversion rate. That's third in the NFL. Somehow, some way, the Chiefs can't get off the field. And the Bills stun the NFL with a three-point win and get it done over KC. So I'll take the Bills and the points here just for more entertainment. I think that would be amazing. By the way, let's just move on, actually. New England is a 9.5-point favorite over the Broncos. You give Denver any chance of keeping it close?
I'll say this. I think Denver has a decent defense, and I don't think New England's great offensively. So you could make the argument that Denver covers, like a backdoor cover. I think New England wins this game by double digits. So I'll take New England to cover. It's a big spread, but New England's the better team. Off a bye, they'll get Cam Newton back. And Denver's just so beat up. So, yeah, I'll take New England at home to win the game, something like 23-10.
Vic Fangio, you're going to keep this close. You're going to keep this close. You're going to keep this close. That's what you do. You've had a long time to scheme for this Patriots offense. You have delved into what Cam Newton is doing. You don't have enough to win, but you are going to cover. I'll take the Broncos to at least be within 9.5 points against New England with the COVID-19 delayed game. Welcome back, Cam Newton. Panthers, 3-point favorite over the Bears at home. No Christian McCaffrey yet, but Mike Davis is running wild for Carolina. Bears coming off a win over the Bucks. What do you got?
So this is an interesting game. Carolina's 3-2, Chicago 4-1. Panthers at home here. I like the Panthers. I think the Panthers will win and cover. I don't think it's a blowout. I think it's close. The one thing that's interesting is Bridgewater's thrown a ton of balls underneath. He's completing like 73% of his throws. Guess who has the best defensive rating against in terms of completion percentage against? The Bears, 57%. So the Bears do not give up a lot of completions. That being said, man, I think Matt Rhule's doing a hell of a job coaching the Panthers. I think he puts them in position to win games. And I'll be honest, this is the thing with me. It's been with me all year long with the Bears. I just cannot get past the quarterback. I just can't. They're so unbelievably limited offensively. The defense even has like a B-minus game. They just have no shot to win. So I like the Panthers in a tight game. Wouldn't be shocked if Chicago wins, but I'll take Carolina cover.
So Matt Nagy is talking on Zoom to reporters, and he's screaming about details in the Bears' offense. The Bears could have been the home for Teddy Bridgewater. Instead, they went with Nick Foles. The Bears' miracles come to an end. Carolina at home as the Bears will slip to 4-2. Mike Davis, who was a Bear last year, not used properly, released early in the season, gets his revenge, gets in the end zone, flexes all over Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, Chuck Pagano, and the Chicago Bears. Panthers by 10. And the worry that the Bears are a fraud is real in Chicago. All right, let's do the Steelers and the Browns. Pittsburgh, 3.5-point favorite over Cleveland.
I'm taking Cleveland to cover. I don't know if they win. In fact, I'd probably pick Pittsburgh to win like, 28, 27, something like that. I think Cleveland's going to cover for two reasons. The Browns have a lot of weapons offensively. And while Mayfield does scare the hell out of me sometimes, I do think that the Steelers can be beaten on the outside and the Browns have weapons that could take it to the house on any given play. So that's a big plus in their column. Also, and this is more of a gut thing than anything else, the Steelers never, ever, ever play, if you want to call the Browns inferior competition, they never play those teams like they should play. They always end up being these tight, weird games with Pittsburgh. And they've been weird games even recently with Cleveland. I just think, the Steelers, when they play a team that's better than them, they always seem to rise to the occasion. And when they play a team they should beat, and I think Cleveland's good, but I do think they're better. I think they should beat Cleveland. They always seem to kind of let those teams linger. So the 3.5, that hook matters to me. I'll take Cleveland to cover. I think they hang around. Worst case, isn't they backdoor cover. So, yeah, I think the Browns are in this game and could win if they get a break or two.
So, have you ever seen the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
No.
You've never seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
I've heard of it. Never appealed to me.
Oh, my. Okay.
You've never seen Dodgeball. I don't want
to
hear it.
Okay. I mean, this is the generational gap between me and you. I will commit to watching Dodgeball before the next Stack in the Box podcast. You probably will not commit, but should watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High beforehand. Forrest Whitaker had one of the greatest football games in the history of cinema in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. They wrecked his car, the opposing high school, and he came out just wanting to absolutely tear up the entire team. That is my vision for Myles Garrett, who is going to want to get his revenge against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's already got 6 sacks on the year, 3 strip sacks. He is going to strip and sack and crush Baker Mayfield enough that the Browns are put into submission. I will take the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Wait, what? You just said he's going to...
I'll take the. I'm sorry. I'll take the Cleveland Browns.
You said he's going to sack Baker Mayfield into submission. Did he have a stroke halfway to that point?
Yes, I did. He's going to crush Ben Roethlisberger. I don't know why. It's like my desire that for Baker to fail that just came up. I don't know where that just. I got super excited. My bad. Ben Roethlisberger is going to be eaten and demolished along with Mason Rudolph and Mike Tomlin and the entire Pittsburgh Steelers. Myles Garrett is going enormous for the Browns. I will take the Cleveland Browns to get it done in a stunner, in a big-time way over Pittsburgh. What do you think?
I think I'm glad that you're still with us after that very salient point. No, Garrett's the kind of guy you can blow a game up. Like, and that's, you know, that's why earlier we were talking about the Titans, and I was kind of saying they don't have those top-line guys. Guys like Garrett, like those guys play in the big games. Those guys, like, that's even why, honestly, I'm kind of going with the Chiefs over the Bills. Allen's been very good, but Mahomes is just the kind of guy that if he has a game like that, he could just win it by himself. And Garrett is a defensive version of that, where he could have 3 sacks and a strip sack and a you know, whatever, a tip ball that goes for a pick 6. He is that kind of player.
He's been absolutely phenomenal. It's one of the reasons why Cleveland is sitting here at 4-1. All right, let's go to in or out. We start with the Chargers. They're a playoff contender at 1-4. Verderam out of nowhere, still buying a little bit, perhaps.
I am, actually. Like, they need help at this point because they're 1-4. But their schedule gets really, really easy for a huge chunk of the rest of the year. Like, go look at the Chiefs, go look at the Chargers schedule. They do still play the Chiefs at Arrowhead week 17, although that game may mean nothing for Kansas City. So we don't know how hard that game's going to be. They've already played the Chiefs once, Saints, the Buccaneers, right? Like they've got a schedule now where, okay, they've got Denver twice, the Raiders twice, which are not easy but winnable games. They've got the Jets. They've got the Dolphins. I mean, there's a lot of games, and they've got the Falcons.
7 playoff teams. How many wins do you think it takes to get in?
9.
So you've got the Chargers going 8-3 the rest of the way.
I've got them. They could potentially go 8-3.
I understand.
Obviously, look. I'm not sitting here saying I'd gamble on them to get in there. But do they have a shot? Yeah. I mean, I think they've got a shot. Look, first of all, okay. So they the rest of the year. I mean, they play Jacksonville. They should win that game. They play Atlanta. They should win that game. They could definitely, between the 4 games with the Broncos and the Raiders, they could win 3 of those games. They could definitely do that.
They have to go to Buffalo. They have to go to Kansas City.
Those are the 2 real tough ones. Yep.
Right. I'm just doing the math here. I think I'm in with you here, Verderam. Anything's possible.
I mean, look, like I said, would I put $100 on it? No. But do I think – look, the Chargers
– you'd get good odds.
Been good. The problem with the Chargers right now is they just cannot close games. They were up 11 on the Chiefs in the second half, couldn't finish it. They were up 17 right before half against the Bucs, couldn't finish it. They were up 17 right before the half against the Saints, couldn't finish it. I mean, my God. And you know what? They hit a upright on a field goal attempt to win the game on Monday night, and they lost the Chiefs because Harrison Butker made like 70 kicks from 58 yards. So, you know, they're not that far off.
And listen, I think we're all in on Justin Herbert being a legitimate quarterback. So I like that call by you a lot. In fact, if I was recommending to you Vertaram, I'd find out what the odds are on it, and I might put down a couple shekels, as they like to say in Israel. Thank you very much. Out of nowhere, let's get the shekel in here. So the Jets, in or out, are more likely than the field for the number one pick. So if you had to bet on – yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a fun way to look at it, right? So, like, if you had to bet, I don't know, let's say go $100, $100. You taking the Jets to have the number one overall pick or the field? I'm taking the Jets, man. And I don't normally do that. I'm a big believer, and I always take the field in life. The Jets are so impossibly bad. And now they've got Bell out of there. Like, I look at the Jets and think to myself, all kidding aside, if they win two games this year, I'd be stunned. One game, okay, things that. Two feels impossible. And I don't know that I feel like that about any other team in football. In fact, I feel like every other team will at least have two wins.
So you've got the Giants at 0-5. That's yep. Amazing. Have they ever been 0-10 combined? Do you know?
I don't know. I'd have to look. I'm not sure. I'm guessing no. I mean, that seems like that's a pretty big road to hoe, but I mean, yeah. I'm not 100% on that. Maybe in the 70s.
And the Falcons are 0-5, too. Atlanta's had a bunch of winnable games, though. You wouldn't think with Matt Ryan they'll
they're
be
not
that.
Going. Yeah, no. Yeah.
So, and then you look at the 1-4s. Minnesota's better than 1-4. The Redskins might not be better than 1-4.
No.
The Chargers we just outlined are better than 1-4. Jacksonville, I don't think, is better than 1-4. Houston might be, probably are. I'm in with you on this one. The Jets are a considerable favorite. I would take the New York Jets.
They have to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think they've got this one on lockdown, even though they're not quite there yet. But stay consistent. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. The NFL will play the playoffs in a bubble, in or out?
So there's been talk that the NFL playoffs could have like dual bubbles, Dallas and Los Angeles. That was reported, I want to say, by ESPN. I'm out because I just think the NFL has been out on the bubble idea all the way through. And I think they may continue to be. I think the NFL... Now, they love their optics. And is the league going to want to all of a sudden go, okay, guys, we're going to a bubble for this, especially, by the way, when the Super Bowl is being played in Tampa, which you know they're not moving. And the governor of Florida has decided that essentially the entire state can go to Raymond James Stadium for that game. I don't think they're going to go to a bubble. They love having the games at Lambeau Field and at Arrowhead and all these iconic stadiums. I don't think they do it unless it's a total outbreak in the country because, the flu season and it exacerbates it, then maybe. But as of right now, I would say no.
So they absolutely should. And it could be fun, by the way, if you did an NBA, NHL style playoffs and everybody was, I don't know, whatever Disney World would be for the NFL. It would ensure the playoffs, and the way literally every state is going to be on lockdown in the next month here with the way things are going, I think it might prove to be absolutely necessary. But the NFL is extremely stubborn, and now we are having fans in certain stadiums. So I am out on them playing the playoffs in a bubble. They're going to squeeze whatever dollars they can squeeze here, and we're just going to continue to live like America likes to live. America! We want our cake and eat it, too. I get it. I appreciate that on some weird level. Adam Gase is just trolling us now, you right here. In or out. What do you mean by that?
Well, so this is kind of just a fun one. I put this in here because Adam Gase in the Wednesday presser, to today's presser since we're recording it on a Wednesday, he made a comment to the reporters that, we talked about whether or not I should keep my play calling duties. And we all had the conversation, and we all decided it was best if I continue to call the play. Who in God's name sat in that room and was like, Adam? I think it's best if you continue to drive this ship.
Well, because they want Trevor, and they want him. Hey, our best play.
Oh, okay. That's fine. But look, I got news. If you're one of those coaches, you shouldn't want Trevor because you're all getting fired, and you're not going to have him anyway. So
they know that. They know it's over.
I mean, dude, like – I was listening. He's talking about, you know, well, Bell didn't think he got used properly here. Oh, well, I think that's irrelevant. Your usage of your $60 million running back was irrelevant? It's unbelievable. I don't know how these guys, a couple of whom I'm friends with, cover the Jets in these conferences on a day in day out basis and their heads don't explode. I can't, like, I'll tell you, you know, in New York, everybody always jokes about the Richie Kotite era and what a disaster it was. This guy is every bit the clown show that Richie Kotite was. Every bit. Like, at least Richie Kotite in Philadelphia was a somewhat respectable coach. What the hell has Adam Gase ever done in his career? And it's just, man, look, this is, in my lifetime covering the league, this is right up there with the worst head coaching tenure I've ever seen. I mean, Hugh Jackson in Cleveland, that's right there. You know, I mean, take your pick from the Lions, but like, man, this is...
Best thing he ever did was the 1 year he was an offensive coordinator in Chicago, and somehow, some way, he made Jay Cutler a competent, useful, productive quarterback. And that got him to Miami, and it got him to New York, and he's been riding it the whole way. And the ride seems to just to be...
Ride's over.
Ride is over, exactly.
Ride's over.
Ride
Carnival's
is over.
Closing up shop.
I guess I'm out if I had to answer the question on whether he's trolling us. I think he actually believes what he's saying. I don't think he's got that level of sense of humor. Let's wrap it up here, Vertaram. I hear you've got NBA Jam. We talked about it on the Sunday podcast. It's
damn right.
I can't quite hang on. Let me expand my window here. No, I can't see it behind me, behind you. There she is. That's it. There it is. It doesn't look like it's plugged in right now.
No, it's got an on-off switch.
Oh, it's got an on. Wow. Yeah. How many times have you played?
Oh, God. I played for a long time. Part of the reason I'm tired is I may or may not have played till 1:30 in the morning yesterday or this morning and on your viewpoint. It's amazing. I've been playing because so it's got regular running, like the regular NBA Jam original. Then it's got NBA Jam Tournament Edition, which is what I've been playing. Also got NBA Hang Time on there, which I haven't delved into yet. But no, I'm jacked up, man. Like I got the initials in there. I'm all set, and it's, you know, it's keeping on track of my record. First like 10 games or so, I just played just kind of like exhibition style, no initials. Then I started playing for, I have not lost yet since I've gone to the initial game. So I won a game with the Knicks. Then last night, the very end, last game I played, I went with the Suns, Charles Barkley and Dan Marley. I was heating up. Caught fire with Starks at one point. I feel good. So it's been a hell of a ride, man. It's been a lot of fun. The Queen came down and played it. I thought she broke it because she was mashing the buttons. Almost had to put up the Queen for adoption. As it turns out, game's fine. Queen enjoyed it. It's all good.
I was gonna ask if Maisie has gotten involved here, your 3-year-old, because that's good parenting, and she should have a stool set up there, and I don't think she needs to go to school, really. I mean, just let's get the jam going, and that'll be great learning for all of us. I don't have any super things exciting that are going on in my life, so I'll just tell a story to wrap it up. Carm at the University of Iowa, Mayflower, my first year there in the dorm, they had Ms. Pac-Man downstairs where you in the study area, and that was an absolute crusher for me to ever actually really elevate myself past just passing. Cause I'd get to like, okay, I think I got enough done. And then I would just, it'd be Ms. Pac-Man all night long. And I could still like remember hearing the sounds of, ooh, yep. As I'm trying to eat the last dot.
Ms. Pac-Man's amazing. It was one of those at the Roscoe Diner back home in New York. And my father used to play it, which, oh, by the way, I got to finish with this real quick. My dad will get all over my ass if I don't. So a couple weeks ago, I talked about how if you got a lawnmower, you've got a rake. And I chastised the old man because he's always out there raking like crazy, doesn't mow the leaves up. I'll never understand it. So he listens to this podcast, of course, as a good father would. And he called me up right after hearing that and said, I demand an apology on the air. You, sir, talking to me, you have one tree in your yard. No wonder you rake. Or don't rake. He's like, I have about 50 trees. I have to rake, or I'd be emptying the bag every 5 seconds.
So, see, now that is an elite dad who doesn't just look at the stats, but actually realizes that there are extenuating circumstances, and it's like you can't just look at the stats and know what happened. You have to actually watch the game. And Mr. Verderam, your dad, elite father, is watching the game both in life and in football, and that's why we love him here on Stacking the Box.
He was very adamant about it. So, Dad, I apologize. You're right. You do have a lot of trees there. You live in the mountainous area. I do have more than one tree, but yeah, the point is well taken. So
I would also, if I may, and I don't know your dad, and I'm sure he's the greatest dad of all time outside of Papa Fred Carman. Love you, Dad, out there. Got to be loyal to home base. But you know, on some level, Mr. Verderam, don't tell us how rocky the water is. Just dock the boat. You picked this house. You got a lot of you know, trees out there. Well, we don't want to hear the complaints. Listen to what you're saying.
Cutting down the damn tree.
Yeah, I mean, let's get creative here. No, don't do that. We need our trees. I love our environment.
Man, has a million of them.
Good to be with you today, Matt. Thanks everybody for checking out Stacking the Box once again. And yes, I will give you the reminder that we love when you give us a rating and a review. It's greatly appreciated. Sunday night, week 6. A lot to talk about this coming Sunday. Looking forward to it, Matt.
Should be great. I think it's the best Sunday so far of the year.
We will see you then.